Chapter 14. The girls returned to school. It was March. Nanny and Kathy wrote weekly. March 22nd, 1949. Dear Nanny, my father won't let me go out with anyone anymore. I don't know why. I've never gotten into any trouble. He doesn't trust me, I guess. Everyone else is going out, but I can't. He says that I have to wait till I'm 18. 18? I'll be old by then. He wouldn't even let me go to the Valentine's Day dance at the school. I hate him. My life is miserable and my mother won't say anything. She just goes along with him. School's boring. I can't wait to graduate. I miss you, Natty. Kathy. Natty sat on her bed, excitedly writing back to Kathy about a boy she'd met at a Valentine's Day party. March 30th, 1949. Dear Kathy, I'm so sorry your father's being so mean to you. I guess there are advantages to having a sick father and a mother who ignores me. My mother's so busy with my sister, she hardly ever asks what I'm doing or where I'm going. Daddy asks, but he was always so tired. I try not to make him more tired with all my chatter. Anyway, I met a boy named Eddie at a Valentine's Day party. His girlfriend, old girlfriend now, told him and his friends to invite their friends, and for their friends to invite friends. Her parents are rich, so they have a big house. He's so cute, with blonde, curly hair. I didn't meet Eddie till Sarah, that was his girlfriend's name, asked him to walk me and another girl home after the party. So I danced with a few other girls. They had records and a phonograph. I'm glad I dressed up. I wore a dress my grandmother made for me when I was in Cleveland. It was black and white. I wore my hair long, parted on one side with a red barrette. I even put on some red lipstick after I left home. I didn't like my shoes, though. They were old black ones Abby couldn't wear anymore. It was so much fun. After Eddie dropped the other girl at her house, he took my arm and walked me home. We talked and talked. He works at a soda shop near school. He promised to make me a special sundae. I can't wait. I miss you too, Natty. Natty thought about the wonderful time she'd had at the party. When it was getting late, she went to thank Sarah for having her come and to say goodbye. She knew her father was waiting up for her. Sarah had said, Natty, you shouldn't walk home alone. It's dark now. I'll have my boyfriend Eddie walk you home. Alice needs to go in your direction. He can walk you both home. How's that? I'm really glad you came. It was nice meeting you. Sarah introduced Alice, who stood beside her. Alice nodded and smiled at Natty. Pleased to meet you, Natty. Eddie met them at the door. He smiled at them both. Wow, I get to walk two beautiful girls home tonight. Sarah kissed Eddie on the cheek and sent them off into the clear, cold evening. Natty knew she would retell the story to her children and grandchildren, how after that special Valentine's Day party, Eddie broke off things with Sarah to date her. He'd escorted Alice to her house. He and Natty had wished her good night. Then he took Natty's arm and hooked it inside his own as they slowly strolled toward Natty's house. They didn't talk about anything substantial, mostly about the party and which kids each of them knew. Natty added a postscript to her letter to Kathy, saying that Eddie was 18 and a senior. She remembered him as being of average height and very thin, with light blonde curly hair and twinkling brown eyes. Natty could tell he was strong just by the way he held her arm in his. Eddie had been very funny, mimicking people from the party, how they talked and acted. Natty had laughed at his impersonations, but didn't say much on her own. Natty smiled to herself, remembering that when they reached the front door of the house, Eddie had dropped her arm and turned to face her. I work at the soda shop on 15th Street. Why don't you come by sometime after school? I'll make you a special sundae on me. Sundays are my specialty, Eddie laughed. He had a wonderful smile with white, even teeth. I'd like that. Thanks for the walk home, Eddie. Bye, Natty had said as she entered the house. As she sealed the letter, she thought about when she should go to the soda shop. She was a little reluctant to go by herself. If Abby weren't so unpredictable, maybe she could go with her. But Natty was afraid of what Abby might do or say. She would most likely embarrass them both. Thinking better of that idea, Natty decided decided to ask someone at school if they'd like to go. Natty sprang off her bed and dropped to the floor. Grabbing a sweater, she dashed out the front door and down the block, depositing the letter in the mailbox before rushing home through the cold. Abby had been sitting on her bed in their shared bedroom, watching Natty write her letter. She resented Natty's obvious glee. She was tired of hearing about Kathy and Natty's friends at school. Abby could feel anger bubbling up inside her. It was like a volcano that started deep in her belly and rumbled toward her chest until she had to cry out. It made her shake and tremble. Then her eyes would roll back in her head and she'd begin to drool. Finally, she would lose all sense of where she was or who she was. She knew she lost control of her urine because she'd always wake up wet. Rose heard Abby's characteristic cry and rushed to the bedroom door, apron round her waist, flower on her hands, with Harry hurrying to keep up. Rose quickly took in the scene and moved to the bed. She made sure there was nothing that could injure Abby as she thrashed. Natty, who'd returned from the mailbox, stood with her father by the door, holding his hand, as he leaned impotently against the door frame. The seizure ended quickly, but seemed endless. Abby stopped moving about on the bed. Her eyes remained closed. Rose turned Abby to her left side, whispered some words of comfort, covered her with the handmade quilt, and told her to sleep. Abby opened her eyes once to acknowledge her mother before falling asleep. Her mother ushered Harry and Natty out of the room, pulled up a stool, and sat down to keep vigil. Later, her mother convinced Abby it was time to see a neurologist. They'd go back to Cleveland. Harry. Rose decided to leave Natty with Harry. She was old enough to take care of them both. They'd leave in June after school ended. Abby was due to graduate. Rose felt another twinge of guilt leaving Harry so soon. While home, she corrected his insulin dosage and instructed him in a proper diabetic diet. She cleaned and dressed the ulcers on his ankles and feet and taught Natty how to care for him. Natty said she wanted to be a nurse. Then her father can be her first patient, she thought, and Laura can look in on them and help Natty shop. Once in Cleveland, Rose would talk to her brothers and their wives about setting Abby up with a young man to marry. She wanted someone who had financial means and would be able to give Abby a nice home and children. Maybe family life would be the cure. Harry didn't squabble with Rose about leaving him or Natty. He'd accepted that he would not get better. He only hoped his condition wouldn't worsen while Rose was away. He didn't want Natty to watch her father die. After witnessing the recent seizures, he felt genuine concern for Abby's health. Maybe he'd been wrong about her condition. Rose, I think you're doing the right thing, taking Abby to a neurologist. I'm worried about her. Do you think they can help her? He said when they had a few minutes alone. Now you're worried, Harry? Why weren't you worried before? I've been telling you for years that she's very sick. You didn't believe me. For such a smart man, I don't know how you can be so dumb, she vented, unable to withstand the temptation to throw it all back in his face. She could never admit to him that he'd been right all along. The seizures were manifestations of Abby's severe mental illness, not of a physical ailment. Rose recognized the irony. All these years she'd run around with Abby, sacrificing her marriage and probably Natty's well-being as well. Rose had convinced herself Abby must be physically ill no matter how many times she'd been told otherwise. How could I be the cause of Abby's illness? There wasn't anything I wouldn't have done or hadn't tried to make Abby well. Did it all have the opposite effect? She couldn't face the answer and wasn't about to give Harry the satisfaction of being right. I'm sorry, Rose. You've always doted on her. I thought the attention was perpetuating her symptoms, said Harry. You were right all along, but why hasn't anyone been able to help her? He gently put his arm around Rose's waist. They were in their bedroom. It was a rare day when both were home and the girls were at school. He wished he could lure her to bed, but he didn't have the strength and doubted she had the will. Rose returned his affection by enfolding herself in his embrace. She said nothing. She knew he'd been right and she'd been wrong. A small part of her recognized she wanted to be in Cleveland for herself, and that Abby had been her excuse. But whenever the thought appeared on the edge of her consciousness, she flicked it away like a pesky fly. She was not at fault. Now she tucked her face in Harry's warm neck so he couldn't see the guilt written on the lines of her forehead, or her mouth slack with sorrow. What could I do, Rose? Is there anything I can do to help her? Rose disentangled herself and turned away to dress the bed. It's too late now, Harry, she said to the linens, then whispered, It's too late now. Harry resumed his attempts to show Abby he loved her. He tried hugging and tickling her, but she became annoyed and moved out of his reach. He asked her to sit beside him to listen to Carmen, one of his favorite operas, on the radio, but she couldn't summon the patience. When it came time for Abby and Rose to leave, Abby made sure he saw her wearing the old tie he'd given her before their first trip to Cleveland. She wore it in her hair like a headband. He knew it was a sign that she loved him, even if she didn't say so. After they left, Harry continued to go to the store, staying as long as his swollen, ulcerated feet would allow. Business was picking up. He rehired Maury, the disabled veteran who'd been his assistant at the Army-Navy store. Rose had given Harry some money she said came from her brother Izzy, who'd become a successful sculptor in New York as well as in Cleveland. Two of his sculptures were in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Harry suspected some of the money came from Bob and Max. He was not comfortable taking their money, so he convinced himself it had come from Izzy. Nanny was thrilled to be able to stay home with her father and see Eddie. She had a wonderful time at the soda shop where Eddie worked. Nanny brought her friend Esther. They both sat at the counter on a Friday after school. Eddie seemed happy to see them, not surprised that Nanny brought a friend. He wore a paper hat and a long white apron over his white short-sleeved shirt. That was all Nanny could see of him from behind the counter. He made each of them a sundae. Esther asked for chocolate with chocolate sauce, whipped cream, and a cherry. Nanny was about to order hers when Eddie said, Remember I said I would make you one of my special sundaes? I'm going to make it now. You're the only one who's ever had this sundae, because it's never been made before. I just made it up. He smiled that resplendent smile of his and began to gather the ingredients. Esther and Nanny smiled at each other, giggling when Eddie moved to the other end of the counter to get what he needed for the sundae. He's so cute, Nanny. I think he really likes you, said Esther, who had jet black hair like Nanny's and violet eyes. People told her she looked like Elizabeth Taylor. Nanny liked Esther, but thought, I should have brought a homely girl instead. Eddie brought Nanny an enormous sundae with 4 scoops of ice cream, chocolate, strawberry, and 2 scoops of vanilla on top of a chocolate brownie. She wondered how he could possibly know vanilla was her favorite. He had piled on hot fudge and caramel with whipped cream, chocolate, sprinkles, and 2 cherries. He inserted a long spoon into the overflowing dish and presented it to her the way the handsome prince in the Cinderella story might have presented the glass shoe on a satin pillow. Then he stepped back from the counter to watch her take the first bite. She was overwhelmed. Anxiety had taken away her appetite. Matching his theatrics, she took a large spoonful, trying to get a little bit of everything onto the spoon, and brought it to her mouth with an exaggerated flourish. It was heavenly. She rarely ate ice cream because she saved what little pin money her father gave her to buy toiletries and small items of clothing and makeup. The sundae was magnificent, like eating lobster, caviar, or filet mignon, although she had only read about those foods in her grandmother's fashion magazines. For the rest of her life, she would remember that sundae, how Eddie made it especially for her, and how dessert never tasted as good. She'd remember it when she was 90, diabetic, and ice cream was out of the question. The sundae not only fed her body, which was starved for luxury, but it fed her desire to be loved and to be special to someone other than her father. She made herself eat the entire sundae, licking the spoon to collect the last shadows of hot fudge while Eddie moved up and down the long counter serving customers, his paper hat bobbing up and down and sideways. Every so often he glanced at Natty and smiled. When it was time to leave, he wouldn't let them pay, either of them. "Come back soon," he yelled, as they opened the door, the bell jangling. "Thank you again," said the girls in unison, their skirts twirling as they practically danced out of the soda shop. Natty couldn't wait to tell Kathy about the visit to Eddie's soda shop. Oh, she knew it wasn't Eddie's soda shop, but it might as well be since everyone went there to joke with Eddie and eat his special sundaes. She wrote Kathy a long letter detailing everything about Eddie, the soda shop, and what everyone wore and what they ate. She couldn't wait to hear back. Natty decided she should get a part-time job to earn some money. She considered the options. She couldn't sew despite Grandma's patient attempts to teach her. She couldn't cook any better than her mother did. She was also concerned about leaving her father home alone more than necessary. She settled on babysitting, preferably in their apartment in the evening or on weekends. Daddy thought it was a grand idea. Natty posted notices in the shops and around town. She asked Eddie to post one at the soda shop and Laura at her summer day camp. When the children came to the house, Harry read to them. He read the stories Natty loved as a child. Their few precious books still sat on the apartment shelves, surrounding the plaque that said Harry Leibowitz, ESQ, Attorney at Law. Natty and her father admitted they were happier together at home than either of them could remember. Privately, each felt a little guilty they didn't miss Rose or Abby. Natty noticed her father had a bit of a spring in his step. Natty had learned some rudimentary cooking and plied him with healthful foods. She checked his feet every day. One day, Natty noticed some tiny red spots on his skin. When she told Daddy, he said he wasn't concerned. "That's nothing. I'm just getting older, that's all. Please don't worry about me. I feel fine. Better than I felt in a long time." She decided to change the subject. "Daddy, I met a very nice boy at the Valentine's Day party I went to. Remember when I went to that party at that fancy house?" "Oh, what's he like? Is he nice and smart?" "He has to be smart, Natty," he teased. They were sitting at the kitchen table after a child had been picked up by his mother. Natty had made them some coffee. "He works in a soda shop near school. He made me the most amazing sundae, Daddy. I could barely eat it all, but I didn't want to disappoint him," she laughed. "Isn't he in school?" "He's already graduated. He's 18, Daddy," she said hesitantly. "He's 3 years older than you. I'm not so sure about this, Natty, even if he is a nice boy. Is he Jewish? What does he plan to do with his life?" "3 years isn't much, Daddy. A lot of girls go out with boys 3 years older." "Yes, he's Jewish. He wants to be an artist. He told me he might get a job coloring in comic strips." "Comic strips? Not much of a career," thought Harry. "Well, I'd like to meet him, Natty. Why don't you invite him for supper?" Natty didn't know that Eddie also boxed in a gym nearby. He learned to box at the Police Athletic League from off-duty police officers. They taught him all kinds of athletics. He was especially proud of his gymnastics ability. He was the best of all the kids on the parallel bars and a pretty good boxer, too. Eddie told Natty all about his family. His father, Sam, came from Belarus by way of England and Scotland when he was 15. Sam told him that his father had pushed him to leave Belarus after a pogrom killed several of the villagers, including Sam's brother. Eddie's grandfather had relatives in England and Scotland who took Sam in and helped him until he finally left for America. After Sam reached Brooklyn, he'd found work in a construction company. He got along well with his boss, who introduced Sam to his sister-in-law, Gussie, who just arrived from Poland. He was swept off his feet by her beauty, and they were soon married. Eddie had inherited his mother's thick, curly blonde hair and some of her disposition. She had a quick and nasty temper, which was often directed at Eddie, the youngest of her four children. The pregnancy had come as a surprise, and Eddie thought that his mother saw him as an inconvenience, born to add to her work. She seemed to save her devotion for his older brother, Mac. She scolded Eddie so often that he invented ways to be away from home. Eddie returned his mother's dislike. He was ashamed of her because she was an ignorant peasant with no interest in learning English and was very superstitious. Eddie had gotten used to seeing her swing a dead chicken around her head to ward off the evil eye. Sam, on the other hand, had adapted to life in America so well that he now had his own construction company. He told Eddie, "As a businessman, you have to be able to communicate with customers. I had to learn English fast." The family joked that his accent was equal parts Russian, Yiddish, English, and Scottish. Mac had worked at the company for many years until he enlisted in the Marines, before the war. Sam had offered Eddie a job as well, but he replied, "Sorry, Pop, swinging that pick will ruin my hands. I want to be an artist. I need to save my hands." "That's okay. If my boy wants to be an artist, my boy will be an artist," said his father. "Why should you do this kind of work when you can draw?" Eddie was close to Pop and his sister Miriam, who cared for him like a mother when he was little. He loved his brother Mac and sister Edna, but they were usually busy with their own lives. Eddie found friendship from buddies at school and at the police athletic league. He never lacked girlfriends, who appreciated his rugged good looks and sense of humor. Eddie was a good student, smart but unfocused. Dormant talents waited to be discovered. Harry identified and cultivated a few of those talents. One evening, Nanny brought Eddie home to meet her father. Harry came home early from the store to shower and change his clothes. He was anxious to appear successful instead of as a ragged, ill former attorney doing his best to make ends meet. He was sitting in his chair by the window when Natty brought Eddie in. Harry saw a skinny young man of medium height resembling a coat hanger with a suit too big for him and a tie both clearly far from new but clean and neat. Eddie's curly blonde hair was brushed back from his forehead. Like sun-kissed waves upon the ocean. Harry noted the cauliflower ear on the left side of Eddie's head. Eddie beamed a huge smile, shaking Harry's weakened hand like a grown man, strong and firm. Harry liked him instantly. Harry skipped the traditional interrogation fathers were meant to give prospective boyfriends. Instead, he gave Eddie $15, advising him to skip the movie they had planned and go to the opera. "Carmen is playing in town tonight," he said to Eddie. "Natty will love it, and so will you, I think." Natty seemed surprised and pleased. She understood the sacrifice he was making. Daddy could have spent the money on necessary things, such as insulin or food, but that would have been for himself. With this gesture, he was telling Natty he wanted to give her something unforgettable and show her boyfriend something that might change his life. Eddie and Natty laughed nervously and thanked him before Natty skipped into the bedroom to change into her best dress. She came back wearing the black and white dress she'd worn to the Valentine's Day party where she and Eddie had met. She tried to slide the short white gloves from her mother's bureau onto her hands, but they were too small, so she decided to carry them. She briefly wondered why she didn't have gloves of her own, or a winter coat for that matter. She was 15. Her mother should have bought her a coat, gloves, and a handbag for special occasions. Perhaps, she thought, Natty would not have a special occasion, at least not while she was away in Cleveland. It certainly occurred to her that she had been forgotten. The missing short white gloves and winter coat told her exactly how Mother saw her. While they waited, Harry and Eddie sat facing each other, Harry in his chair and Eddie on the sofa. "What do you plan to do, Eddie?" "I'd like to become an artist, but I need money for art school. I'm working and saving. Then maybe I can get hired as a junior artist or apprentice. I think I'm going to like working on the comic strips, but I don't think I want to do that forever." Harry nodded, listening. His attorney training taught him to listen better than most people. This was a young man who had ambition. He liked that for Natty. He liked that Eddie seemed gentle with his daughter. He wondered if she knew what the cauliflower ear meant. He'd probably not told her he was boxing. Don't worry too much about the story, although you'll be given a libretto that tells you what's going on in the opera, instructed Harry. Listen to the music and look at the costumes. The opera is an experience like no other. I took your mother once, Natty, when we were newly married. It wasn't her cup of tea, but I have a feeling about you two. I think you'll enjoy it. The two set off for the opera house, catching the trolley down the street. Eddie held Natty's hand. They talked about the opera. Neither knew anything about Carmen, except that Natty recalled her father listening to many operas on the radio at home. She wondered if she'd recognize it. Natty and Eddie were anxious about mingling with the rich. They considered adopting posh accents and laughed as they tried out a few. The only fancy people they knew were in the movies. Judy, 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 quipped Eddie, trying to imitate Cary Grant. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night, said Natty. You sound just like Betty Davis, laughed Eddie. No, I don't, said Natty. I need more practice. As Harry had hoped, the opera changed Eddie's life. He was dazzled by the music, lights, and costumes, but mostly by the music. His attention was torn between the beautiful, vivacious girl by his side and the performance on stage, unlike anything he'd ever experienced. He couldn't wait to tell his friends about Natty, but knew he couldn't tell them about his other newfound love, except maybe one friend, Norman Weissman, nicknamed Norm. Eddie worried if some guys knew he liked opera, they'd think he was a fete. He and Norm had formed the Bijou Club, whose main objective was to go into Manhattan on weekends and listen to jazz. At school, they wore identical sweaters with a big B on the pocket. Norm wasn't into opera, but like Eddie, he loved music and knew how to keep secrets. Natty enjoyed herself, mostly because she was on a date in a fancy place with fancy people. The costumes were like nothing she'd seen before, even more beautiful than the bridal gowns in her grandmother's magazines. The music of the opera didn't dazzle her like it did Eddie. She told him she was surprised she hadn't developed a taste for opera after years of listening to it with her father on the radio. On the walk home, Eddie put his arm around Natty's shoulders, aware that she was cold despite her sweater. "Why don't you put on your gloves? Your hands look cold," he suggested. "I thought maybe you would warm them up for me," she answered shyly. The next time they went out, this time to the movies, Eddie carried a winter coat over his arm, a beautiful black cloth coat in Natty's size. It was the first winter coat she ever had.